This podcast is presented by Celery Digital. Thanks for listening.
When I made the mistake, I thought, what a great gift I could give my fellow vegan bakers. And then the more I started thinking about it and learning about the decline of the honeybee and seeing prices go so high and realizing that actually consumption of honey was part of the problem with the decline of the honeybee, I realized I could actually contribute something and help these beautiful creatures with a product. And that's when I seriously started thinking about going to market with bee-free honey.
Welcome to Celery Talks, and thanks for joining our conversation this week. Celery Talks features ideas and the stories behind them. We will tell the stories of business ideas and the people that made them part of their stories. Our guest this week is Katie Sanchez, the founder of a company called Bee Free Honey. Katie stumbled upon the idea of honey without bees, but would later come to find out the immense benefit and demand of the product. Well, Katie, thanks for joining me. First off, for those of us who are not familiar with Bee Free Honey, tell us about the product.
Bee Free Honey is a honey made from apples. So it's the only plant-based honey on the market. We use organic apples. Lemon juice is the only preservative. And then a titch of vegan quality non-GMO cane sugar.
Okay, well, starting with your story and going all the way back, where were you born? Where did you grow up?
Oh, well, I actually grew up in Mound, Minnesota. And my father, among a lot of other things, he was in the military and a lawyer, but he was also a beekeeper. And we grew up with an apple orchard in our front yard. And I grew up with bees, and I grew up climbing apple trees after school every day. And so it's kind of a full circle thing.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And little did you know that those two things that were so close to you would mean so much later. What did growing up in Mound, Minnesota teach you?
Mound then was much smaller than Mound now, and we grew up on a lake, and the property was probably more than an acre. And so, you know, there was a lot of exploration and a lot of time in the lake or skating on the lake or pulling each other around on sleds. And we were rambunctious, and we had a pet turkey. A turkey wow. Had a broken wing and landed in our yard and became the family pet. So it was just kind of a really organic way to grow up. It was cool.
Who were some of the influences in your life that contribute to developing Bee Free Honey later in your life?
Well, Bee Free came about by accident. I was trying to make apple jelly. I'd never made jellies before. And I don't really like how sweet jellies are. And so I was trying to make a less sweet apple jelly. And my son was born special needs. And I was in a hurry because I needed to get to him, the person that was helping me out. He came home on machines. And so the person that was helping me out had to go. And I had already started it. I didn't take the time to read the directions. I just dove in head first, guessing how a person might go about making jelly. And I just did a really bad job, but I don't waste anything. So I decided I'll just can it, see what happens, see if I can use it for anything. So the next morning when I went and looked, it was just like honey. And I called my dad, and I was like, "Dad, I just made honey and I don't have bees." His compliment was, "Well, if anyone's going to do that, it would be you, Katie." Thank you. I appreciate that.
What were you doing for a living at the time?
I was a pastry chef for Whole Foods when Whole Foods had one market in Minnesota. And we also did a lot of vegan baking and pastries for not just Whole Foods, but cafes and coffee shops around the Twin Cities. So I'd always wished I could use something that back then there were a lot less options. And so I'd always wished there was something softer that you know, lemon zest would be able to come through more easily, or, you know, vanilla bean and things. It was always a struggle to get the more settled layered flavors into vegan pastries. And so when I made the mistake, I thought, what a great gift I could give my fellow vegan bakers. And then the more I started thinking about it and learning about the decline of the honeybee and seeing prices go so high and realizing that actually consumption of honey was part of the problem with the decline of the honeybee, I realized I could actually contribute something and help these beautiful creatures with a product. And that's when I seriously started thinking about going to market with Bee-Free Honey.
So how did you become a pastry chef?
Well, I was actually going to school for pre-med and discovered that I hate paperwork. And a lot of what you do in medicine is paperwork. And I thought, I'm not going to be able to be successful doing this. So a friend of mine said, well, why don't you do what you do all the time anyway? And I was saying, I don't want to be a cook my whole life. And they're like, no, not a cook, a chef. I was like, oh, that's different. Somehow that word just made it glamorous. And so I couldn't afford to go to pastry school, so I went to cooking school in Louisiana.
That's a long way from home.
It is. I've moved away from home many times, and I always seem to come back. But so I got into the kitchen and started working on the line and just figured I'd weasel my way into the pastry department one way or another, and was fortunate enough to become the assistant pastry chef for Leah Henderson at D'Amico Cucina, which was one of the premier fine dining restaurants in downtown Minneapolis at the time.
So did cooking begin to be something that you loved beyond just that original suggestion from friends and family? They were like, you're good at that. Why don't you do that? Is that something that you really began to love to do? Or was it just a career for you?
Oh, no. I've actually cooked and baked my whole life just because it was in my blood, I guess. For my 10th birthday, my dad asked me what I wanted, and I said that I wanted to be able to cook dinner for the family and use the stove by myself. So I made hamburgers, which is really lame.
But at that young of an age, that's impressive.
And then by the time I was about 12, I had ventured into making homemade pasta with a rolling pin, which I can't say was successful, but it did hold together, so I'm proud of that.
So for you, between cooking and baking, is there a strong connection with Bee-Free Honey?
Well, the honey came about by accident, but, you know, I grew up with bees. So I have to say, I absolutely love them. They're amazing creatures. I've always had an affinity for them. I love butterflies and all pollinators. And the more research I did, I started talking to beekeepers locally and friends of my father's. And what I realized was beekeeping had become so far away from what it used to be. It used to be that if you kept bees, you had a shed and you would keep enough honey in the shed for years of drought or flood when there wasn't enough pollen for the bees to gather. And last ditch effort, if they went through all the reserves, you'd give them sugar water, but that was in dire straits emergency situations. What's happening now is sugar water and corn syrup are the norm. Honey is in such high demand. The U.S. doesn't produce enough honey to meet demand. So only 1/3 of the honey sold in the U.S. is actually harvested in the U.S. Everything else is imported. And if you really want to blow your mind, look up honey laundering. And it's a real thing, and it's really scary. And there's a lot of tainted honey out there. and they ship it from country to country to clean the label, to get it legal so that they can bring it into the U.S. And what they do is they mix it into their U.S. harvested honey to increase volume. But it's dirty honey. It's kind of scary. And so I was learning about the darker side of the honey business, but also the darker side of beekeeping. And bees no longer are in a hive with a 2 to 3 mile radius of pollinating, and then they come back and they make their honey. What's happening now is they're trucking them across the U.S. to pollinate groves all over the place and across the country. So the bees are loaded on flatbed trucks. They're trucked down to Florida and pollinate there for 2 weeks, and then they're loaded back up and they're trucked to Georgia and they pollinate for a couple weeks. And what's happening is they're going through cycles of climate, not in a natural progression, but just over a course of days. So they're being exposed to every climate. The pesticides they use on oranges are not going to be the pesticides that they use on peaches or almonds or, you know, blueberries or whatever. So they're being exposed to every pesticide, every climate, every state has different parasite issues. And then it's not just one truck coming in and pollinating. There are multiple, and in the case of the almond growers, 30,000 trucks go to California every year loaded with bees to pollinate the almond groves. If you can imagine 30,000 semis. And so if you have a healthy hive and it lands next to a hive that has mites or other diseases, they cross-contaminate, and now that healthy hive is infected. And so they're being exposed to everything, and then their natural food is being taken because they can get money for it, and they're being fed sugar water, so their bellies are full, but their nutrition is empty. You know, the response I've gotten from some beekeepers about it is the bees love the sugar water. If you put out honey versus sugar water, they'll go to the sugar water every time. And my response to that is, if I offer my child a candy bar or an apple, they'll go for the candy bar every time. But that doesn't mean that's what I should be doing. As stewards of this earth, we can do better. We can do more. We can demand that the growers keep bees on site rather than renting them in. We'll still need the beekeepers to manage the hives. We're not promoting that beekeepers be eliminated. We're not advocating anything anti-bee. We need them as our pollinators. But we need to diversify our crops so they have full nutrition all year long. We're in a mono agricultural system, so it's one crop for miles and miles. We do have opportunity to grow other blooms in between, and we should be taking advantage of that because it wouldn't just benefit bees, it would benefit all pollinators, and it would be, create a stronger ecosystem. We need to diversify our pollinators too, so we're not relying on one insect to pollinate our entire food supply. Because what happens is that if that insect population declines like it is now, we find ourselves in a predicament. Just like you would diversify your financial portfolio and your retirement portfolio, we need to diversify our blooms, diversify our crops, and diversify our pollinators. There are over 2,000 species of bees. Why are we relying on one to pollinate our crop? It's because they create a commodity. They were easily domesticated. And we as a species are lazy. You know, we don't want to have to take care of things and put that much effort into it. We can do better. We're choosing not to.
Yeah, that's pretty eye-opening to learn. They're basically being extremely overworked. So when did the accidental first batch of bee-free honey happen?
That was in 1999.
How long after that event did you begin to learn about the benefits for the ecosystem of the bees?
Oh, it was years. I didn't get the first bottle on a shelf here locally until November of 2011.
Okay.
It was just something that kind of evolved. It wasn't for a purpose other than personal curiosity, but then I started getting mad. And then I started talking to my dad about, what can I do about this? What can we do? Because it seems like nobody's talking about what's really happening. All they're talking about is cell phones messing up the bees' ability to talk to each other, and it must be a pesticide and things like that. And so my dad and I started talking about how one of the ways we could help bees is by alleviating the demand of honey by offering an alternative, and start talking about what is now known as bee-free honey. But then not just selling a product, but using the product as a platform to educate. So people started hearing and started discussing what's actually happening out there. And so then it started to make more sense. And on top of that, it's safe for young children. There's no fear of botulism. It's safe for those with honey allergies. And the fact that it's vegan, there were so many attributes that I thought, you know, I should be doing this.
What were you doing with the product between 1999 and 2011?
Just using it at home.
And you were using it regularly?
Yeah, I actually stopped buying honey, and I was in a slow progression of being an omnivore and transitioning to vegetarian, vegan lifestyle anyway. Once you start learning about how all of our actions affect the environment, it just became a natural progression.
How many iterations were there of the recipe from that original batch over the 12 years?
Gosh. Well, so when I first made the accident, and then I decided to possibly bring it to market, I had to go back and figure out how I don't make jelly. Uh-huh. And so that took some time. But then when you take it from a home recipe and bring it large scale, it completely changes. It's a different animal. I couldn't make it the same way. And there was a co-packer in McGregor, Minnesota, Minnestalgia Foods, and they were fabulous. They worked with me. I have to say, for about 2 or 3 weeks, every week I went up there for a couple of days, and we'd make, you know, these huge vats of honey, and every single time it turned out horribly, and it was dark and bitter, and it wasn't going right. We had to deconstruct and rethink and reorganize, and it took a lot of money and a lot of wasted product, which killed me, to figure out how to do this in a really large batch. And I didn't think it was going to happen. I really thought this is where it dies. The dream's gone.
So was that the greatest challenge you had?
Oh, gosh, no. Every time we increased, we had to reevaluate the formula. But every time we increased, you had whole other challenges of how do you bottle faster. And we were bottling by hand, and you have to keep it to a certain temperature for bottling. And then, so how do you get it out in time to keep that temperature without burning the product? And I mean, by far that is not, I thought it would be, but no. The challenges that were ahead of me, had I known, I'm not sure I would have gone into it.
Wow. That could probably be said for everyone and something in their life. So early on, when you began to sell it, when did you realize people want what I have to offer?
I guess when Whole Foods picked it up.
Were you still working with Whole Foods?
Like, yeah.
Employed by them?
Oh, no. With my son's needs, I wasn't able to keep the pastry chef hours, and so I went to the dark side and got an office job and started a job with investment company, and then I was working at the time for home health care company and as a staffing manager. And so by that time, there were multiple Whole Foods in Minnesota, and I was with a different company, but I introduced it locally and went through the uphill battle of getting it approved by Whole Foods. That's not an easy task and a lot of paperwork. But so went through that, and that, I think that was when people actually bought it without me standing there demoing it.
Tell me about meeting your co-owner, Melissa Elms.
Melissa and I met at a trade show. She was kitty corner from my booth. It was my first national trade show. And she saw the sign, Be Free Honey, and said what people first say almost all the time is, how can you have honey without the bee? And so I asked her to just try it, and then I would explain it. And the reaction was generally the same as most people was, oh my gosh, this is so much like honey. How do you do that? And then, are you sure there's no honey in this? And, you know, I don't know if you've ever had apple blossom honey, but apple blossom honey has the essence of apple. And with Be Free Honey, it starts out very honey-esque and then finishes with this almost breath of apple, and then it kind of evaporates. And that's kind of what apple blossom honey does. So she and I were talking, and I told her it was my first show, and she was really kind, and she brought people over and introduced them to me. She gave me tips on how to make it a successful show, and she spoke to people after the show and told them to stop by. So it was just, it set a great tone for me, gave me a little more confidence. And after the show had passed, I just thought I should write her an email and thank her for the, you know, those kindnesses. And we just started talking, and it evolved into, you need help. And it's like, you're right, I do need help. And then it turned into a partnership.
Everything that I've read and then knowing you two, it seems like you just have a really close relationship. And then hearing like 2 weeks after you guys met, she decided to partner with you. And that just seems rare. Why do you think you guys connected so quickly?
Well, it wasn't exact. It was a few weeks after the show that I connected with her. And she flew out to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And we met again and talked some more. And so it wasn't quite that rapid. Okay. But, you know, we're soul sisters. She says sisters from another mister. So I don't know. We were able to see the same vision and understand where the other was coming from. I mean, she's brilliant in sales and marketing and being able to talk to people and get them to understand it on a business level, where I'm more of research and development, and I do more of the back of the house stuff. And I really enjoy talking to the public. And so we complement each other. Her skills are not my skills. And you know, she has no interest in developing new products. And so we complement each other.
What event has caused the largest growth in the company?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, we've had multiple waves. Certain stores that came on, Vitamin Cottage Natural Grocers and HEB and Whole Foods, and then Wegmans on the East Coast. Those have been amazing areas of growth. We're working with Amazon and getting ready to launch with them with the new products. But then Shark Tank, we were on Shark Tank, and that was a huge area of growth, but it was simultaneously we were growing and dying.
Prior to Shark Tank?
No, when Shark Tank aired, It was a double-edged sword. We went on Shark Tank because we needed money for growth. Mm-hmm. Expansion. And by the time we aired, we hadn't yet closed on our deal. And so we hadn't expanded. And as it aired and all of the orders came in and from existing distributors and stores, we had new opportunities coming in, but we were in the same space that we were when we filmed the show. And so we had to say no to all these new opportunities. We were taking the orders that were coming in and slashing them in half, if not more. And so while, even though we were in that space and we thought we had hit ceiling and we grew 300%, even on top of us thinking we were maxed out and killing ourselves over it, we were still saying no to all this business. And so we were growing and dying simultaneously. It was probably one of the most stressful, horrifying times, just watching it all happen. It was terrifying. And you feel a little helpless.
How has Shark Tank impacted since after the show and you signed the deal, and have things normalized, stabilized? Have you seen a bump from your appearance?
Well, so then after Shark Tank, it was after we closed and we're funded, it was a long haul of finding people that wanted to work with the slow cook process. That was not easy. And we had been strongly advised not to build out ourselves. A lot of people said that after Shark Tank, once they built out, they outgrew the space they had just spent all their money building out on. And so we were looking for a co-packer. And, a lot of co-packers these days, they want to heat and package. And a slow cook is not in their, it's not in their business plan. We started out locally here in Minnesota and just kept expanding the radius. And it wasn't until we got down to Houston, Texas, that we were able to find somebody willing to work with us. And then it was, moving everything down there and training the crew and working through all the kinks. And then realizing we had the wrong equipment and having to buy equipment and getting set up. And then, of course, Hurricane Harvey hit. Oh, wow. So we got everything set up just in time for the hurricane, which was, another wow.
Were you impacted by Hurricane Harvey?
Yeah, it shut us down for a while. So out of everything that could have happened, we were really fortunate. It wasn't catastrophic. We were able to get back up and running, but it's hard. They're just unforeseeable things, and you do the best you can. And it's been a learning experience. It's been really hard, but it's been a learning experience, and we've grown from it. And a lot of things we would do differently, but a lot of things not, because you can't see everything that's coming.
Yeah. What has e-commerce, how's that contributed to your business?
Well, before Shark Tank, we did not sell on our website at all. And that took off. Mark Cuban, his team was instrumental in getting us set up. They don't give you more than 2 weeks notice that you're airing. And so in 2 weeks, So in 2 weeks, Mark Cuban's company just hauled and got our website pulled together with a shopping page and photos and all these different options. And Melissa worked her butt off to get that page done. And then I was working on trying to get as many of those packages pre-packed. So when it aired and the wall started coming down, we would be able to just slap something, a sticker, a postage sticker on a box and be able to get it out. So there was a lot of prep going into those 2 weeks, but we had no idea what to expect or how to do it. It was just basically this shotgun wedding between us and e-commerce.
That's pretty good. Where can you be found online?
So on our website is where you can find all the flavors. I think that's the only place that you can get everything at one spot. But we're available through Amazon and Vegan Essentials and, Vitacost.com. Okay.
That's something you mentioned, flavors. That's another question that sticks out to me. Once I see Be Free and I go to your website, you see all these flavors, all these interesting flavors. When were the flavors developed?
My brain doesn't stop. I've actually developed now probably over 50 varieties, but you can't put all of those out at the same time. So we've been just kind of picking and choosing. And, you know, I just think, what foods do you use honey in? And why wouldn't I streamline that and make it into one bottle? So use mint and tea and honey and lemon all the time. So I decided, why not steep some fresh mint in some honey and see what happens? And it was lovely. It's not this overwhelming mint. People think mint and it's toothpaste or, you know, a breath mint that's in your face kind of thing. It's very soft. It's really complimentary. And if you actually add it to hot water and you don't have tea on hand, it's a beautiful beverage. And then with ancho chile, I steep whole anchos, the red curry. There's a lot of sweet and hot and honey and curries to sweeten it. So, I just took what it is in the culinary world, and I married the two and saved people a step. And I have to say, the red curry on toast is beautiful.
Where do you hope to see Be Free Honey in 5 to 10 years?
You know, we're really working hard with getting Be Free into food service right now, and as ingredient supply and in food service, so it's used in restaurants. It gives people an opportunity to try it in a place that they feel comfortable in already and get to know how to use it. People, for some reason, are confused. They're not translating that you can use it in any way you use traditional honey. And so it gives them an opportunity to see how other people would use it and spark their imagination on how they would use it at home.
Now, Katie, what are you excited about right now? What's new with the company? What are you guys currently doing?
I'm really excited about the flower pollen infused honey that we just launched. It is super cool. It's the same nutrient value. It's actually slightly superior, but the same nutrient value as raw bee honey, but bypassing the bee again and going directly to the flower pollen. And so every plant has a different nutrient value profile. So the different foods you eat have different nutrients, and the same goes for the pollen. And so because we're purchasing raw flower pollen and dried flower pollen, and we are custom blending them, we can offer the only honey on the market where you know exactly what you're getting in every tablespoon. So no other honey can say that, because no other honey can test every bottle to see what pollens are in that honey and then create a nutrition profile for that bottle. And so we're the only honey on the market that has verifiable nutrition. It's pharmaceutical grade pollen, so it's allergen free, and it has all the phytosterols, vitamins, minerals, micronutrients. It's crazy. It's crazy cool. And so, you know, it used to be, sure, you have a honey alternative, but does it have the nutrients of bee honey? And so now we can say, literally, there is no need to eat bee honey. Allow them to keep their honey, increase in numbers, allow them to regain in health and strength so we don't lose their population. And if it's not bee-free honey, it's, you know, find something else. But allow the bees a break so we don't lose them as the valuable pollinators that they are.
Katie Sanchez and Melissa Elms have their company growing fast, and Bee Free Honey is increasingly available in more and more stores. You can find their many flavors of Bee Free Honey on their website, beefreehoney.com. There you can also read about the environmental initiatives that can impact the rehabilitation of the honeybee. Thanks for joining us today, and join us next week as we hear about an incident that led to an evolution of the drinking glass. You can subscribe and leave a review on iTunes, and also listen at CeleryDigital.com as well as Podomatic.com.